Who's fooling who now? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Good to be back with you, sitting here in the studio, preparing to get some things out for Camp American.
That's right. Those camp is coming up shortly, June 24th through the 30th, ladies and gentlemen. If you have children or grandchildren, or you yourself want to come and help volunteer or to help out at camp, you can learn these biblical and constitutional principles, which we share with you on a fairly regular basis here on the program. It's going to be, like I said, for the week of June 24th at Pokagon State Park in Angola, Indiana. It's in the northeast corner of Indiana. Beautiful, sets on beautiful Lake James, gorgeous setting, and the kids get great education. And this year, Chuck, they're going to get some top notch. We have at least three PhDs coming in to discuss various aspects from biblical economics to global warming to the attack on American sovereignty. We also have you and I, truly, who are there regularly teaching the history of our country from a biblical perspective. And the thing that's important to the kids, lots and lots of camp games and recreation activities.
And I'm not sure who the third PhD is, but I know of at least two of them.
It's Dr. Kaufman.
Michael Kaufman.
Dr. Vollacord.
Sasha Vollacord.
Okay, and maybe I'm thinking David Whitney has a PhD as well.
I think Dave has a master's.
Okay, it's a master's. So, okay, two PhDs and a master's. So.
And the rest of us have what amounts to a master's equivalent. Not to brag, but I think you and I together, you have a master's equivalent in political science, and I have a master's equivalent in history. I'm not claiming the degree, but I have the experience and the research.
Well, and that's true. So folks, if you want to find out more, go to campamerican.com, campamerican with an N at the end, .com, and sign your kids up and come to camp. Well, you know, I've just got a call today from a parent whose daughter's coming back probably for her third straight year, and he's coming too because he wants to learn more. We have a lot of fun and a lot of fellowship and a lot of discussing issues and topics and learning and seeking out God's word about things and seeing how his providence has worked in our country from before the time of our founders all the way up to even yesterday. I know it doesn't look like that with what many of the things are going on today, but the point is that we have to remember that God is sovereignly in control of everything that happens and every choice that's made. And Chuck, that kind of leads us into what we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely.
Because as folks who were listening regularly yesterday, no, we talked about an article by Doug Bandow in Forbes magazine basically saying how both major parties, your liberties and our constitutional protections aren't safe with either one of the major party candidate nominees or nominee wannabes. And you mentioned the end, kind of a teaser about that we're going to be talking about what's sort of a rebuttal to that op-ed piece in Forbes. Well, this one's found on Fox News' website, on foxnews.com, and it's written by a gentleman by the name of Michael Goodwin, who happens to be a contributor to Fox News and also a columnist for the New York Post newspaper. And he wrote an article that says, "Don't be fooled by third-party scenarios as the presidential race heats up." Chuck, you and I kind of started laughing when we were both reading this because unlike Bandow's fairly well-thought article, this is a landmine of logical fallacies.
Oh, absolutely. What this is basically is a stay here on the plantation or a massa will whip is essentially what this is saying. Don't you dare take any other choice but those that the two major parties have shoved down your throat. Otherwise, we're going to make sure that you're punished severely. And there's no other way to describe what this article says other than that. You're right. It's very poorly thought out. It is, I should have put it more clearly, it's an attempt at a rebuttal of Bandow.
Yes.
It, shall we say, does not achieve its goal.
And those were both published on the same day, on the 23rd of April, ladies and gentlemen. So I don't believe Goodwin actually meant it as a rebuttal of Bandow. As a matter of fact, he wrote it and submitted it without knowing that Bandow was writing his piece. But they fit together as such great bookends that we couldn't resist going into this. For any of you out there who've ever thought about straying from the two-party plantation, you know what you are? You're a political locust. You're noisy. You're bothersome. And you emerge like clockwork from your hidey holes. Because that's how Michael Goodwin opens his article on FoxNews.com about this. And he says basically that these third-party locusts find presidential elections irresistible. So brace yourself You're about to be swarmed by those much holier than thou. Right there, Chuck, I could have stopped reading and just said, you know what, this isn't worth the paper or ink it was written with, but since it's electronic, it isn't worth any of the bits and bytes that it took to put it up on the webpage.
Well, let's put it this way. This is an appeal to snobbery.
Yes.
This is a snob appeal. Basically, it's saying that third-partiers are the snobs, but in fact, we're really the cool kids. And all those other kids are the nerds. Don't sit with them at their cafeteria table. There's a lot of language in here that's just essentially inflammatory. Things like we think of them as zombies who are hoodwinked by Democrats and Republicans, and third parties are here to save us from our stupid selves. Well, all good satire has a seed of truth in the middle. And let's face it, if you really think that you're going to be saved by either of the two major parties, which essentially can be described as Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B, then you really are not very smart. And if you can't detect that, basically, it doesn't seem to be year after year, election after election, no matter which party is in, the same things keep happening over and over and over again. Maybe there's something wrong. There's another logical fallacy in here, Barry, and that is the fact that this fellow is one of those people that seems to think only in terms of four-year cycles. Apparently, there's only an election every 4 years.
Well, you know, and there's some voters who do believe that as well, who only come out during a presidential cycle and vote in the general election. But
yeah,
they usually are voting for one of the two major parties. Those are not people who he would consider these political locusts, the third partiers. Now, Chuck, you and I both, for purposes of full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Michaelis and I have both been actively involved in third parties in the past. As a matter of fact, you're listening to the state chairman and Chuck and the state vice chairman past of the Constitution Party of Ohio. However, we have since abandoned that idea because, well, we see how the deck is stacked. But, you know, I believe that what's happening here, Chuck, is that Goodwin also sees that after a while, people start counting cards and they start realizing the tricks the dealer's using, and they start winning against the table. And that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid that third-party folks are starting to see how the decks are stacked against them, and they're starting to get wise. You know, we talk about the Tea Party folks and how they're getting politically savvy, how they are using technology, they're learning how to get past all the rhetoric. Well, you know, a lot of people in the Tea Parties are not necessarily just Republicans and Democrats. A lot of people in Tea Party groups are third-partiers who are utilizing those resources and that education and that training in order to be more effective candidates.
Well, Barry, let's look at, for instance, Ron Paul's strategy this time around. Is he winning necessarily the primaries?
No.
He's not winning the primaries, but he's certainly picking up delegates in places where he wasn't supposed to get them, like Iowa and Minnesota. It's turning out that while he didn't win the overall vote in the counties, he's picking up all the delegates. He got something like 20 out of 24 delegates in Iowa that he wasn't supposed to get. His strategy has been brilliant, and what it is it's playing the system for its weaknesses.
Well, he definitely understands the idea of a caucus state and how that works.
Exactly.
Which is much more so than maybe some of the other candidates realized when they got into this race. But here we are, Mr. Goodwin here in his article basically saying that these third parties are holier than thou and that they have refined tastes. And so neither major party candidate is acceptable to their refined taste. And they alone are looking for the last best leader of the free world. You know, honestly, I really don't care if he is the best leader of the free world. I want somebody who's just basically going to be faithful to the Constitution. You can lead the free world, but if your own government is going into socialism, you're not leading much.
You know, one of the reasons you and I have bantered this about who's our favorite president of the 20th century, and I think you and I pretty much agree on who our favorite 20th century president is.
Calvin Coolidge.
Calvin Coolidge. Everybody always asks me, why is that? How could you like Calvin Coolidge? I'm like, name something that he did.
Well, basically, I said this to my class this week, that he did no harm to the Constitution.
Exactly.
And he's the only president since, well, I don't even know if you could consider that George Washington didn't do any harm to the Constitution in its infancy and nascent days, but definitely you can look at Calvin Coolidge's record and realize that he did not engage in trying to tell Congress what to do or to direct the courts. He didn't try to rule by executive order or by presidential privilege. And he certainly didn't allow a bill to go through that he knew to be unconstitutional, unlike a former occupant of the White House within our last 4 to 6 years, who basically said, well, the courts will take care of it for us. We'll go ahead and sign the bill. And the courts can find it unconstitutional, even though we know it's unconstitutional on the face of it. Well, yeah, we actually got a surprise there. Calvin Coolidge didn't like his kind of surprises.
No, and you know what? Neither did his predecessor, Warren Harding.
That's right.
Harding gets a lot of bad press. And he was not a saint, but he was also not a bad president. Were there scandals? Yes. And it was because he was not a hands-on manager. And in fact, a lot of the scandals didn't really pop up until after Harding had dropped dead of a heart attack. I think Harding gets a bad rap. And in fact, Harding saved the country. I don't like to use that phraseology, but basically what he did was there was a depression in 1920 and 21. That Harding stepped in and did something that Franklin Roosevelt can't claim, and that is he did nothing, or except cut government spending and cut the size and cost and control of government. He actually cut back regulation and he cut government itself, and just like one of my other favorite presidents, Martin Van Buren, really saved the country from a very deep depression that obviously made itself known in 1929 after Harding's policies had been swept away by Hoover, who was not a great president by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it basically gave us Franklin Roosevelt light. Barry, I really grow tired of this idea that the great presidents are the one who grew the presidency. We need a great president right now who will be great because he shrinks the presidency.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But according to Mr. Goodwin here, what we're basically saying is that we're an elitist, and the only kind of person we're looking for are the type of people who all share one thing in common, according to this writer. They're unelectable. So we're saying that somebody who will not trash our form of government, who will not stay within the bounds set by our founders, and who will not try to go off and use the American taxpayers as personal ATM machine, they're unelectable. Well, isn't that, I think, what they call a self-fulfilling prophecy? If you choose to blindly close your eyes and walk away from somebody who has those qualifications, by saying they're unelectable, you're fulfilling your own prophecy.
I'm going to make a statement here. This guy is attempting to make it look like he's stomping his feet, but really what he's doing is treading lightly through a minefield. Let's look at the names of the quote-unquote presidential elitists he's talking about here. Evan Bayh.
Mm-hmm. Olympia Snow. Michael Bloomberg.
And John Huntsman.
You know what he's actually afraid of? He's not really attacking the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party. He's attacking a new entity that's out there, Chuck. There's a group that is actually trying to get on the ballot in all 50 states. And it's basically, I think it's called the America Chooses Party. And they're trying to get on in all 50 states and run a centrist, which we know is code for liberal, like Evan Bayh or Olympia Snow or Michael Bloomberg. Those are the people they've been courting. So, yeah, he is attacking this idea, because I think he's very much worried that if you pull people from what they call the centrist camp, it could spell the doom of both major political parties in that respect by creating a centrist third party.
Well, he cites Ross Perot.
Yes.
And that's essentially what Ross Perot did. Ross Perot played centrist to Clinton's liberal. Clinton tried to play that Democratic Leadership Council thing, which was supposedly a centrist Democratic Party organization. Ha, 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 ha. All you had to do was watch the Clintons in office. The first thing they did was attempt to seize control of health care. Not exactly a centrist position. Perot came in and tried to be that centrist, and it drew 19% of the vote. The fact that he was probably certifiably insane at the time really doesn't seem to have meant anything to a whole lot of people. And then that whole thing about Bush ruining his daughter's wedding or something, the temporary withdrawal from the race and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see what would happen with that. And I think what would probably happen would be that the end result, well, like for instance, Ross Perot actually ended up pulling more conservative votes because he hoodwinked conservatives into thinking, you know, this is anybody but George H.W. Bush. This is when we get into this mindset, anybody but, we end up with people like Barack Obama, because if you'll remember, the cry in 2008 was anybody but Hillary.
Exactly. And I think, well, I remember some conservative commentators trying to pull this situation that we wanted people to cross over to the other party in the primary to vote for who? Barack Obama. Because it was anybody but Hillary. Yeah, Operation Chaos. How'd that work out for everybody?
Yeah, not too well. Well, Barry, we're out of time again. We're really out of time. So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.